this year, and I'm going to go over what did happen in licensing law. But what I would like to do first is talk about, you know, this is review and preview, and let's talk about a little bit of the preview that's going on in the licensing area. I'm sure most of you know that keeping your license current, if you're a contractor, is probably the number one most important thing you do as a contractor. The reason being is that if you don't keep your license current and you happen to your license happens to lapse during the middle of a job, you have a chance of not being able to collect any money on the job. Worse, the law allows owners to disgorge all money that's been paid on a job to date. So because the penalties are so high and so awful when it comes to contractor licensing issues, there is a lot of litigation having to do with licensing. And this year, we've seen a tremendous uptick in licensing cases. And what we've also seen is an uptick in sort of the nastiness of the licensing cases. It's gotten to the point where we've seen it with subcontractors going after general contractors. This is not even out of the owners, where subs, of course, haven't been paid on the job. Subs abandon their work. They come back and then claim the general contractor has a licensing problem. And they will go to untold lengths to try to prove and try to unlicense a general contractor. And I've not only seen it in my practice, but I have gotten repeated phone calls from counsel all over the state with the same problem. So this is a little bit of the preview. What some plaintiff's attorneys have gone and done is they've gone to the California State License Board, and they are trying to get a new rule instituted. Now, I don't think it's going to happen, but we are monitoring this closely. Some homeowners, and this is from the homeowner's end, but this will affect anybody that's in commercial construction also. Some homeowners are saying if you have an RMO or an RME, and he is not physically present on your job, managing your job, then he is not a proper RMO or RME, which means you are not properly licensed, which means you can't collect any money on a job, which means you may be able to be disgorged of all your money. Now, think about it. Big contractors, big subcontractors out there, you have one RMO, one qualifier for that license, or one employee that's your qualifier. And you've got, what, 100 jobs going, 200 jobs going, 50 jobs going? How does that qualifier be on every job? But this is the movement in the Contractor State License Board. They've actually started a task force on this very issue. Now, I'm involved in this. Also, the AGC is involved in it, obviously something very of great interest to all of us. But this is kind of the movement that we have seen in the Contractor's License Board. Unfortunately, the Contractor's License Board is a consumer protection agency. That's great if you're an owner. It's terrible if you're a contractor because the Contractors Licensing Board doesn't care about contractors. They only care about consumers. So if you go to the licensing board with a problem and you're a contractor, don't expect a lot of help. That it used to not always be like that. The Contractors State License Board used to be staffed with people who were former contractors and understood the business. That's no longer the case. It's staffed with bureaucrats and people that don't quite understand the construction business but are really looking out for the grandma that's being, you know, bilked over by the unlicensed contractor. The problem is that bleeds into commercial construction. So that's one new development out there, and hopefully next year I will, obviously if something changes, we'll send out an e-alert to everyone about this, but I don't think it's going to happen, but I just want you to be aware that this is something that's in the works right now, and it obviously would affect all contractors in the state of California and would have the effect of driving any large contractor out of the state. The other issue we've seen a little bit of is key TAM false claims actions. And we've seen them in the licensing context and the non-licensing context. And let me give you a little background of what a key TAM false claim is. Everybody knows about false claims. If you're a public entity and somebody submits a false claim to a public entity, they can be liable for treble damages and false claims. This came about because in the Civil War, somebody was supplying muskets, and they sold the U.S. Army 500 muskets, and they sold them two. So, and they got paid for 500. So this has been on the books for a long time. A key TAM false claim is when an individual, not the public entity, goes after somebody to recover false claims damages, which includes treble damages. I've seen now twice, and now I've heard from other counsel, that subcontractors are using this to go after contractors when they're not being paid. When they find some little thing that the general did that may not have been perfect, they claim it's a false claim. They go to the public entity. The public entity obviously declines because it's not really important, and they continue with a false claims key TAM action. This is a new stunt I see with a subcontractor council. Now, if anybody's sitting out there thinking that's a great idea, if you're a subcontractor, I would not do that because the last person that did that now owes my client $100,000 in attorney's fees. But I'm telling you, it's not something, it's something that's coming up and is out there. So if there's any issue, if you smell any false claims at all, please be aggressive about it because this is something that's coming up. So let's talk about what happened last year. We have two new cases on the licensing law, actually three, and I'll go through one of them at the end. A little bit quiet for the court, but I got to tell you, there's, for every published opinion on licensing, there's 10 unpublished opinions. This is how often the Court of Appeals are getting licensing cases to the court. They just decide to unpublish them. Only two were published. In this case, we had a party that contracted with an owner, and when they were contracting, the name on the contract did not perfectly match the name on the license. All right? Very important. When you contract, make sure you're contracting with the entity that's licensed. Don't put another entity on there. This is something that comes up all the time. Even though the licensed entity performs the work, it doesn't matter. What matters is who is contracted for the work, not who performs the work. So this is a little, in this case, it was Montgomery Sampson LP, and I think the name on the contract was Montgomery Sampson Limited Partners. I mean, that's how, I mean, it was that silly. And this is where the Court of Appeals said, okay, we've had enough. That does not bar you from being able to recover, even if there's a slight difference between the name of the licensed entity and the name of the entity used on the construction contract. That's not going to bar you. So the courts are kind of getting wise to this kind of funny business that's been going on. The second case, though, is a different case where this is an interesting case where a contractor was working on Indian land, and he actually did not contract in the name of his license. So, but he did have his own individual license. He just contracted in the name of his of another company that wasn't licensed. Again, big no-no. His argument: well, I'm on Indian land, so it doesn't count. You know, I'm gonna. I've heard that before. Anyway, so that did not work. Okay, you cannot use the sovereign status of the Indians of Indian nations in order to avoid your contracting responsibilities. Anyway, so in that particular situation, this is again a contractor not contracting in the right name of the licensed entity. In this case, the contractor was found to be unlicensed and was and would potentially be required to disgorge all the monies that it was paid for the contract. So those are the only two licensing cases we have this year, but as you can see, it's very important to maintain your license and make sure your license is in good standing and you contract with the license. A new bill came out regarding home improvement work, and this is sort of interesting because I know a lot of people, I'm not sure how many people do home improvement work here, but there's right now, if you're a construction manager, you do not need a license to be a construction manager. Now, that there's a little caveat on that. That means you're not contracting with subcontractors. You're a true construction manager. You do not carry subcontracts. You do not perform work. You don't go out and do the concrete work on a job. So true construction managers are not required to be licensed in the state of California. The legislature decided that in a home improvement context, if you're acting as a consultant to an owner builder, which is really another name for a construction manager, you do have to be licensed. And that is a new standard. And I suspect, and there's a preview, that this is going to go, the legislature might start thinking about requiring construction managers to be licensed also. Now, construction managers in the public context do need to be licensed, but in private work, they do not. So that's a change, and this affects people like, there's a lot of people out there that do interior decorator work and stuff like that, and this is something that would affect them, and they now need to be licensed for that work. This is just a sort of a litigation issue. Another problem is that people are, get sued by an owner, and the owner goes out to the contractor's license board and files a complaint. And so here you have a lawsuit and a complaint with the contractor's license board. And you go to mediation, you want to get rid of all of it. Well, you can't. That's the problem. And this is sort of provides a disciplinary action to the licensee and also to counsel if they require in a settlement agreement that the owner drops their complaint with the contractor state license board. This is a real bummer, I think, because it really prevents really settlements in this case, because I'm not sure why you'd mediate your claim in court only to have to deal with it all over again at the contractor state license board. But this is a situation. You cannot require in a construction contract, a settlement agreement, that the other party withdraw their complaint with the contractor state license board. Now, it's always been existing law that roofing contractors have to maintain workers' compensation insurance, even if they have no employees. The reason being is that, when have you seen a roofing contractor without employees? They always have employees, and they always fall off the roof. And, of course, they go to the board and roofing workers' comp is probably one of the highest premiums out there. So a lot of roofing contractors just say, I don't have any employees, you know. These are all independent contractors over here. And, of course, the guy falls off the roof, and he has no coverage. So the board got wise to that and said, okay, you cannot be a roofing contractor and not have workers' comp insurance. And this just expanded the existing law. But this workers' comp issue is a real issue because you have to make sure that you are properly covered for your workers' comp, because there is a case out there that says if you do not have proper workers' comp coverage, you can be considered automatically and retroactively unlicensed. So it's very important to make sure that your workers' compensation is maintained, compensation coverage is maintained, and it covers all employees. Because, again, one of the things I'm seeing a lot of is when you get a lawsuit, I get an immediate request to see all the workers' comp policies, and they audit the policy and see if you've got the coverage. I don't know how many people are using the LLC. Contractors finally can be, that are LLCs, finally can be contractors. But I'm going to just do a little overview. There's been a big changes in the LLC law. So anybody that's using an LLC as for a contractor, why don't you give me a call or something? I can go over some of the new issues regarding that. I'm not going to go over all of them because there's quite a few of them. But, for example, operating agreements can be oral or implied. There's limitations on fiduciary duty requirements and things like that. But since contractors can, and it can be an LLC and a contractor, this is something that might be of interest. The last thing I wanted to talk about is arbitration. Brand new case came down on Wednesday, so you're hearing it first here probably, is that the Second District decided that an arbitrator cannot decide issues of licensing as to public, for reasons of public policy. This is very different. For years and years, the Supreme Court has said that arbitrators are not allowed to decide issues of licensure for other reasons, but now the Second District went so far to say you can't decide issues of licensure for public policy. This is something I'm surprised. A lot of people don't know about this. A lot of people have arbitration provisions in your contracts. And what comes up in the arbitration is someone claims you're not licensed. And then you go to the arbitrator, and the arbitrator decides either you're not licensed or you are licensed. The arbitrator has no jurisdiction to decide that issue, period. And you don't want an arbitrator deciding that issue. Why? Because you can't appeal that issue. You want to be able to appeal that issue if the arbitrator gets it wrong. You want to be able to go to a court. So what you do in that situation, if the issue of licensure comes up, you stay the arbitration, go back to the court, ask for an evidentiary hearing under 7031. You must do that. Because if you don't do that, you risk of any decision that the arbitrator decides being overturned on jurisdictional issues, and you got to do the licensing hearing all over again in the state court. But also you risk not having an appealable issue. And that is something you don't want, especially when the problem is if you lose your license, the issues are so draconian. And it would affect every contract you had during the time period that you were determined not licensed. Anyway, I'm available later for any questions. Thank you very much.
Great. Marianne, thank you. Thank you. Hey, before you leave, you know, a couple of years ago, you had that trial out in Riverside for the city of Victorville.
I did. Were you there?
I happen to be a spectator. Can you give us an update on that?
It settled. We settled the case for $54 million. The city of Victorville recovered, and we're getting in our bank account right away. Actually, just yesterday we got some money in the bank account. So city of Victorville won that case for $52 million. adding the attorney's fees, it was a $54 million total during the appeal process. Jacobs Engineering finally capitulated, and they agreed to pay us the entire amount, $54 million. It's a big win for cities, big win for public entities, actually. I mean, they got all of their money, all of it back.
Great.
So it's a great deal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.